Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Here I am, another day behind the microphone here at Faith Radio. Thanks to their commitment to the hiring of unskilled labor. I'm very excited about today. We've got a great show coming up. My friend Patrick Albanese will be joining me in just a minute. And then it's going to be Randy Newman, who is very entertaining. And then Dr. Melissa Mork will be with me in the second hour. So it's going to be really an exceptionally interesting day. I am just off to a great Monday, and I must say, I don't know, I'm just feeling good. I had an omelet with two kinds of cheeses today, so that's not a bad way to start the day, and so far, I just think it's getting better and better. I hope your day's been like that, too, where you just feel like the Lord is showing up, and you've had good fellowship with Him, and you're surrendering your day over to Him, and you're trusting the sovereignty in your life, because you've got nowhere to go, only His word. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Of course, we all know that. And I appreciate you listening to Faith Radio, and I love that you like the show. And we're going to get it started. After a second here, I want to read a piece of scripture that I love. Of course, I love it all. But Psalm 73, verse 24 and 25 and 26 says, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And the earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." We'll take a short break and be back with Patrick Albanese.
I'm Dr. Alan Kearden, president of the University of Northwestern and Northwestern Media. Faith Radio was first supported by college students of what is now known as the University of Northwestern back in 1949.
The building and construction of this station we owe largely to the sacrificial gifts of the student, faculty, and staff of the Northwestern schools. And so, today this station stands as a monument to answered prayer and the sacrificial giving of the greatest gang of students, faculty, and staff, I believe, anywhere in all the world today.
And Faith Radio continues to broadcast the truth and the hope of Christ today. Yes, 70 years later, thanks to the financial support of our incredible, generous listeners. Relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching has continued uninterrupted for seven decades, thanks to you. So I'm here to wish Faith Radio a happy 70th anniversary and to thank you for standing with us in the journey.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any...
Welcome to the show, and I'm so glad on Mondays I get a chance to talk to my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese. Patrick, welcome to the show, coming to me via Skype.
Via Skype and via the outdoors, where I was out shoveling, preparing for the next storm coming.
It's coming hard and fast. I think we're getting it tomorrow.
Yeah, I shoveled my entire front yard because for the first time since I've lived here, I now have the greenest grass in town.
It's the only way to get it. The shovel in winter. Yeah.
Yeah, my new snowblower helped a lot because it throws everything about 15, 20 feet now, or the repair that I did.
Yeah.
So I was able to, and unfortunately, the neighbor's going to have to redo his driveway.
And vinyl siding.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, goodness.
All right. It's President's Day, and I want to chat about some of our past presidents just because I think it'd be fun. But I also know that at your school system in Des Moines, you can't really – we don't call it President's Day anymore, do we?
No. It's always closed for conferences. Everything's conferences. Columbus Day is just coincidental. It's okay. These are conferences. We're doing conferences. Well, will the teachers be showing up? Oh no! They got the day off. Why do they get the day off? Who's having the conferences? Well, the janitor will be talking with the maintenance guy. And we're going to get those bathrooms fixed.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Well, let's just reminisce on some of our past presidents. Did you know Thomas Jefferson wrote his
not
own?
Personally.
I know you didn't know him personally, but he wrote his own epitaph. And including his many accomplishments, the one accomplishment he didn't list was being president.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. James Madison felt his voice was too annoying to become a minister, so he went into politics instead.
And that holds true to this day for many of our politicians. Yeah. I mean, Hillary, it's like,
careful. He was also the shortest president at 5'4". Now, I think in today's media spotlight, you would imagine that would make it tougher.
I think it would, because you'd have somebody who's 6'2" come stand next to you. I mean, don't they do that a lot where they'll have the towering person, you know, it's like, quick, go over there, shake that guy's hand. You'll get all the votes because people say, ooh, that guy's too little. He's too little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. In 1821, James Monroe received every electoral vote except one. That delegate didn't want to spoil George Washington's record as the only president voted in unanimously. He retired. And like many, we're left deeply in debt from years of public service. That's really not the case anymore, is it?
No, they seem to get richer. I know Trump's been losing money, but like, you know, they go in with nothing, and it's like, how did that work out? I know it's a pretty decent salary.
Yeah.
They cover your stamps, which that does add up.
It does.
You know, your now, post, but I buy the forever stamps, you know.
President Clinton, since leaving office, has made about $139 million in speaking fees. So today, being president is a good resume item on your way to a really good job.
To a really good job. Yeah, well, okay, you're president. That's just one person. I get more concerned with these, you know, you look at like this Alexandria, whatever the heck her name is anymore. And, you know, she was a bartender last year. That's fine. Congratulations. Now you're getting $174,000 a year at 29 years old. You've received a boost in pay of approximately $150,000. And even if you just serve that one term, we got you covered. And you think, well, who wouldn't want that job? You say, my gosh, even if you're in a complete embarrassment or inept, you're going, if I can just squeak out 2 years on the taxpayer dime, I will forever receive some of the taxpayer dime. And my foot is in the door for maybe a lobbying position or something else. I mean, my life is made. I can easily see why people go, whatever it's going to take, just get me in office. I just wanted one term,
oh,
and I'm set.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
It's like the actors that say, just give me one sitcom. One sitcom.
Yeah. All right. Back to the presidents. John Quincy Adams owned a pet alligator, and he kept it in the East Room of the White House. I don't think that would fly nowadays. Just saying.
No, but I can imagine when it came to diplomatic matters.
Let's go back to the East Room and have a little chat.
Soiree in the East Room.
Got a snapping alligator back there. I think you would get exactly what you wanted.
Oh, I have a snapping turtle in the West. But got Snappy the alligator right over here.
All right, this is interesting. Martin Van Buren, he was the first president born in the United States. He grew up speaking Dutch because obviously his parents were Dutch. And if you have trouble picturing him, just think of Grandpa from the Munsters.
Yeah, he had those crazy sideburns.
Yeah, exactly.
That looked like they could house a small family of bats.
All right, President John Tyler, he was a busy guy. He fathered 15 kids. He knew all of their first and middle names. I think back then that was enough proof you were qualified to be president.
Yeah, and I think that's when they first decided, you know, we probably need a child tax credit in the system.
Exactly.
He pushed for that.
Yeah, and we can thank President Polk for hosting the first annual Thanksgiving dinner at the White House in 1845. I think he said he needed a way to eat as a way of reducing his anger from watching the Detroit Lions lose yet again.
Yeah. Did they go back that far?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Speaking of postage, Patrick, you said that earlier. Zachary Taylor always refused to pay extra postage if someone sent him a letter without enough postage. So that's why he didn't learn about his inauguration for president until almost a week after it was announced.
Well, hang on a second. You mean you could send a letter collect?
Yeah, it didn't have enough postage
on it. To the president of the United States. And he says, ah, no. It's like, wait a minute. You get it for free, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
James Buchanan, do you know anything? Remember him? He was the only perpetual bachelor president. And he had a habit of closing one eye and leaving the other eye open. Because it turns out he was nearsighted in one and farsighted in the other. So he did that in order to see well. And his Secretary of War thought Buchanan was sending him messages in Morse code and invaded Utah.
Oh, I remember that.
I might have made that up. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know because you don't want to call it an invasion.
No, you can't. You can't call it that.
We overstepped the boundaries.
Right.
I just thought the other general said, why is that guy winking at me so much?
All right, Andrew Johnson. You know President Johnson. He was illiterate when he got married at age 18. His wife taught him how to read and write and then encouraged him to go find a job where being illiterate until you're 18 wouldn't matter.
What? Well, so president.
As an aside, Patrick, 9 presidents never went to college.
Wow.
Yeah, 9 presidents.
That's
fascinating fact day on Afternoons with Bill Arnold.
We place a lot of like, well, if you go to college, you must be smarter. But you and I both know a lot of people that went to college and were thinking, what were you like before?
Right.
This is the educated you.
Whew, right, right.
Meet the other one.
All right. Benjamin Harrison, of course, he was the grandson of William Henry Harrison, the president that died of pneumonia after 30 days in office. So his grandson took no chances. He wore long underwear to his inauguration. And his short speech was, I'm here for 4 years, enjoy the meatballs. And he was seen running back into the White House.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he had one of those wool blankies from Norway. And now, his grandfather, was he the one that he caught pneumonia because he gave some sort of stem winder?
It took forever.
Speech.
Wearing no jacket, yeah.
He's, wait till they get a load of me. I got so much to say, you know, and he said it all, actually.
Yeah. Calvin Coolidge, he was a huge animal lover. He shared the White House with countless dogs, cats, birds, 2 raccoons, a donkey, a bobcat named Smokey, lion cubs, a wallaby, a bear, and a pygmy hippo.
Wow.
You have no response to that.
Imagine
which I appreciate.
Having to be president after that. Okay, please. You know, do you guys, what are those services that, you know, it's like it never happened?
Right. You need that.
You're going, please fumigate the drapes.
Yeah.
That's probably when the tradition of remodeling the White House where every new president started.
Probably.
A coon named Smokey. I don't know. Whatever. It was somebody named Smokey.
Herbert Hoover. Of course, he was president from, 29 to 33. He and his wife spoke Chinese when they didn't want to be understood. How cool is that?
Well, it works for a lot of Chinese families.
Yeah. And did you know FDR was really superstitious? He canceled appointments on Friday the 13th and wouldn't sit at tables of 13 people. He had 5 adult kids that between them had 19 marriages, 15 divorces, and 29 children.
Holy moly, that's a lot of wedding showers.
That's a lot of, yeah.
Wait, he had 5 children,
5
had
kids,
19 weddings?
Had between 5 adult kids. They had 19 marriages, 15 divorces, and 29 children.
Wow, always a bride, never a bridesmaid.
Right.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And Harry S. Truman, he owned a clothing store before he went into politics. I'm pretty sure his campaign slogan for president was, you're going to like the way I look in the White House? I guarantee it.
I guarantee it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then when Truman, it's so funny because when Harry Truman left office, he literally put a suitcase in his car and drove back to Kansas. He did have Secret Service, 1 car, follow him to the gates of his farm or his ranch, whatever, in Kansas. And that was it. And then he
probably kicked him out after that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to stay, pick up a shovel.
Right,
let's get to work.
All right, let me take a break, Patrick. When we come back, we'll talk more about what's going on in the news. Patrick Albanese is my guest. He's my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have on my studio line Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, who's out shoveling today. because the snow is already hitting Des Moines and it's going to hit Minneapolis tomorrow. So that's what's ahead.
I shoveled my roof. I have it's called a roof rake. It's a shovel with a 20-foot pole. And so I shoveled off my roof just to get some of the snow off. And of course, unfortunately, it ends up right back in your driveway, which means you got to do that again. But yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for the new storm.
Yeah.
We set a record here in Des Moines. I think it was the most snow in a 6-week period in, you know, some ridiculous number of years. We've set a new record for the most snow in 6 weeks. And it's funny because we were talking the other day and I said, 6 weeks ago, we were saying, what a mild nothing winter. I laugh at you.
I know. I know. Now we're just getting it all back. It's all coming back.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I know that you and I have got interest in this episode that's happened in Chicago. I know you're from Chicago, so you always pay attention to Chicago things. And this episode of this actor, Jesse Smollett, who claimed he was, pretty much attacked with racial and homophobic rants outside a subway at 2 in the morning in Chicago. And now it appears that much of it's just made up.
Yeah. Why would somebody do something like that unless they thought it would help somebody?
Well, who might it help?
Well, you know, he is friends with Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. And, coincidentally, you call it coincidence. I call it very interesting. Mm-hmm. They had introduced some anti-lynching legislation, which made lynching a hate crime. I don't understand how our current laws don't cover this. And I'm always leery of why are we passing another law? It's like with gun control laws. If the current laws aren't being enforced, why will the criminals obey the new laws?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that failed. And then a couple of weeks later, this hate crime comes out, this alleged hate crime of Jesse Smollett. Then guess what? The bill gets brought back up for a vote. And this time it passes the Senate because, well, gosh darn it. Look what this is happening right here in our America. And it's pretty darn sure it's Trump's fault. So, for all we know, I mean, he is friends with those people. That maybe is what helped get that bill because it brought it front and center. Like, look at this terrible thing that allegedly happened. So maybe mission accomplished, but maybe he didn't really want it to go to the police. And in doing that, the Chicago police are doing an amazing job of saying, a lot of this story doesn't add up. Like, first off, this is MAGA country.
Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago. No, in fact, here's how blue Chicago is. The two Nigerian brothers couldn't find a MAGA hat in the city. They had to go to a store and buy just a generic red hat because a red hat, Make America Great Again, doesn't exist in the city. Like, we won't even have that in our city. So, to think that there'd be two random guys walking the streets with these hats on, first off, you're taking your life into your hands. That was the first thing that smelled to me. I go, who would do that in Chicago?
Right.
And then they, at 2 o'clock in the morning, they go, hey, there's that guy from that show we don't watch. Whoever he is, go get him. And of course, we've been having this discussion where you look at the two guys that they finally caught them and they're huge bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge.
There's Arnold Schwarzenegger in his heyday against these two guys would lose.
Yes. These guys are enormous.
Yeah. So Jesse Smollett evidently did something, said something. I don't know. He had anti-bully spray. I don't know what he had, but he says he scared them away with.
He
punched him back. And these two guys that are, they're basically already carved in the side of Mount Rushmore because they're solid rock. I guess it was too much for them to handle. And they said, we got to go. I mean, we've been waiting to do this, but this guy's too tough. So it smelled. It just smelled.
Well, I think of the extent that some people will, and maybe he's telling the absolute truth. They did go through the bodybuilder, the Nigerian brothers bodybuilders' apartments, and they found the rope, the receipt for the rope, the bleach,
the hats,
the masks. There was a lot of corroborating evidence, what that would suggest. There are also magazines with pages ripped out because there was also a letter sent to him at Fox, which was threatening, and I don't believe that's legal. You can't do that.
Oh, so, I know. The letter was straight out of a Columbo episode. You know, the cutout things from the mascara ads. It was just terribly done.
Yeah.
Terribly. And of course, these guys, maybe this is not their thing, or they just thought they'd never get caught. They leave the discarded magazines with missing pages and cutout stuff. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So either these guys actually did it and they, you know, they were friends of his and had been hired by him to train him. And they just decided, we don't like our new boss that much. So let's go beat him up at 2 a.m. during the polar vortex, because we know he just can't resist a Subway sandwich. None of it passes the smell test, but the media ran with it.
Yeah.
They ran with it.
And then you think of the resources that the police were using. They had lots of police officers. I think FBI got involved. And all of a sudden now there's a ton of resources being used for this case. And also, I think it weakens the case when there is an actual hate crime.
It absolutely does. But you know, I think we've kind of entered new territory where in America, the reward goes to the biggest victim. People line up their victim status street cred, you know, and, you know, Elizabeth Warren obviously made great hay out of pretending to be Native American, even applied in Texas for a position and said, I'm an American Indian, and got the job. And you could say, well, your whole career is based on that lie. And it's because people are trying to make right some of the wrongs that were done to Native Americans. And she took advantage of that, and playing a victim pays these days. It's sad to say, and that really slights real victims.
Yeah,
victims of real crimes.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, real discrimination.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, it's been fun chatting about the presidents on this day, on President's Day, and then it's also just nice to catch up with you and hear your insights to what's going on in the news. I always enjoy your angle and your perspective. Thanks so much for doing the show.
Oh, sure. I just wanted to throw one more thing in, because this is good news. I did get contacted by the bluegrass group at the church, and they said, we're looking to add a banjo. So I showed up. I was pretty excited. And they said, just set the banjo over there. Come get it after the services.
Oh, that's so sad. All right. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Bye. All right. Patrick Albanese has been my guest. We'll take a break and be back with more in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. A strong marriage is rooted in shared faith. Here's author Melanie Schenkel.
Our faith is the center point of our marriage. And honestly, I don't know how marriages survive without it. You know, if you don't know that as you're walking side by side in your marriage, that he's praying and he's trusting God, and that I'm praying and I'm trusting God, and that we're trying to do the best that we know how to do. And neither one of us are perfect. You know, we make mistakes and we hurt each other and we disappoint each other. But ultimately, we're both finding the security of who we are is coming from Christ. And we're not looking for the other one to fill every single thing and every single need. And that helps us be a complement to each other, to where, you know, his strengths complement my weaknesses and my strengths complement his weaknesses. And then together, you really get that image of that's what God intended marriage to be, where the two become one and you become this better version of yourself in Christ through marriage.
Learn more from Melanie Schenkel on marriage at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Randy Newman is my guest. I like everything about Randy Newman. He's a teacher and writer with Connection Points. It's a ministry that seeks to engage people's hearts the way Jesus did. What a novel idea. He's also the senior teaching fellow for apologetics and evangelism at the C.S. Lewis Institute. I've heard of him. And he's the author of many books, including Questioning Evangelism and Engaging with Jewish People. Randy, how are you?
Great. Doing well. Good to be back with you.
It's so nice to be back. I had so much fun last time you were on, and I didn't know you were not only really smart and wise, but funny and everything else. So thanks for coming back.
Boy, the setup is, this could be a disappointment for people.
I know. Trust me.
Trying to fulfill all of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at some of the influencers in your life, and I think, gosh, I have so many of these myself. And so I feel like I've got a kinship with you. But I really love our listeners to hear a little bit about your faith story, because I think you grew up in a Jewish family. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, those stories of conversion and are always so interesting, and then the implications that comes with it when you go back to your family and say, hey, guess what?
Oh, yes. Well, let me first say I am fighting a little bit of a cough today, so I hope my voice holds up. So let me know if
you sound good.
I speak louder.
Yeah. No, you sound good.
Okay. So, yes, I did grow up in a Jewish home in suburbs of New York City, and my family went to we were members of a conservative synagogue, but my parents, I would say, were very secular in their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But I took Judaism more seriously than the rest of my family, and I was really trying to. I think I was searching, and I was frustrated that God seemed so very distant and alien and disconnected. And so I tried a whole lot of observance of Jewish law and things. One year, I guess I was about 16 years of age. I was in high school, and on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, the Day of Atonement, I decided, okay, finally, once and for all, I'm going to get all of this right. Because I never obeyed all of the laws you're supposed to obey on Yom Kippur. So this year I was going to do it right. I fasted. I didn't drive in the car. I confessed all the sins that were listed in the prayer guide at synagogue, and it didn't work. At the end of the holiday, I was walking home, and somehow it just seemed like it didn't work, and I felt like God was still just as distant and alien. And I was discouraged. I looked down at my shoes. I was wearing a really nice suit and some dress shoes, and I remembered that in my Hebrew school training days, they taught that on Yom Kippur you're not supposed to wear dress shoes, and that you're supposed to wear just soft-soled shoes. And I went, oh, that's why it didn't work. I wore the wrong shoes. Well, I guess maybe next year. And then I thought, that's the stupidest thing in the world. You got to be kidding me. I mean, is that how you get to know God, by remembering a billion different minute rules? By the way, the things about the shoes are not in the scriptures. That was added by the rabbis.
Yeah.
So I don't think it felt like a prayer, but I think it had that same effect. I said, there's got to be some other way. And it was very soon after that that this friend of mine invited me to his Presbyterian church youth group. And his motivation for going was just that it was a lot of fun and the girls were cute, and that's what he told me, so I went. And he was right, and it was a lot of fun, and the girls were cute. But I met a group of Christians who really knew God in a real and personal way, and I got jealous. You know, it was these Gentiles who had a better relationship with my God than I did. And that started for me to start trying to figure out and asking them a lot of questions and arguing and debating. And eventually, I read the New Testament, which they gave me, and I read C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, and a whole lot of that. It took 3.5 or 4 years. It wasn't until I was a sophomore in college that it all came together. But I saw that Jesus was the Messiah, and he was the one I was looking for.
Mm-hmm. You know, Randy, it's always interesting because if I grew up in your family, I would probably believe what you believed. And if you grew up in my family, you'd believe what I believe, right? Isn't that fair?
Generally speaking, but I think when the Lord is drawing people, it doesn't matter what family you're from or what culture you're from.
I completely agree. But your upbringing is certainly going to be your starting point for how you see God and what you are pursuing.
Right. So the starting points of people coming to faith in Jesus are so diverse, and they're all over the place. But none of those are too far or too difficult for God. So
I agree.
My Jewish upbringing taught me to worship God, to seek Him, and the notion that you could have a real personal relationship with this God did not seem far-fetched You know, Abraham had that kind of relationship, and Moses did, and David did, and the prophets talked about it that way. So the fact that I saw people my age and in my culture that had that kind of connectedness, just that didn't seem all that alien. And so when I kept thinking, well, yeah, but we don't believe in Jesus because, you know, Jews don't believe in Jesus, and they challenged me to think about it. Well, why not? And I think reading the scriptures is so very, very powerful. I thought the New Testament was going to be this horribly anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish book. But in fact, I found that it was very Jewish. Matthew reminded me a lot of Isaiah. And Jesus didn't sound anti-Semitic. Jesus sounded amazingly Jewish and connected what he was saying about himself to what prophets had been predicting for hundreds of years. So the surprise for me was how very Jewish and how very coherent it was.
Mm-hmm. Randy, when this kid asked you to go to youth group, let me just ask, is there ever a time when a Gentile kid is invited to go to synagogue?
Well, certainly not nowhere near as much, no. Modern Judaism does not see itself as a missionary faith, you know,
okay,
to invite people in. So, whereas Christianity, by its very essence, is. Now, we could make a case that Judaism should be a missionary faith, and I think that, calling Israel to be a light to the Gentiles means the Jewish people should want to introduce the nations to their God. But today, in America at least, Jewish people don't invite Gentiles to synagogue, but Christians invite everybody to church youth group things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, my friend who invited me, I'm not so sure his zeal wasn't necessarily evangelistic.
Right.
It was,
he wanted to hang out with
friend,
his pal.
Like, have fun. Yeah,
right.
That's right. Hang out, and this is a really good place to hang out. And
meet girls.
Like I said, meet some really nice girls.
Yeah. All right. So tell me the conversation when you go back and say, hey, Mom and Dad, guess what?
Well, everybody always wants to know that conversation. I should tell you, though, there was, for me, it was more than just the intellectual thing of being convinced that Jesus was the Messiah and the one who fulfilled prophecy. It was also that he was the one who fulfilled these longings I had. I went away to college and I was a music major, and I kept hoping and thinking that at some point, I was going to find some piece of music that was going to be the fulfillment. And so when I read C.S. Lewis's chapter on hope about how we have all these disappointments and we could keep trying to find other things to fulfill or we could become cynical, but then he said, if I find that there's no experience in this world that truly satisfies, it must mean that I was made for another world. I know I just butchered that quote and didn't say it quite right.
That's okay.
but that was pulling it all together of, oh, this is why that so many things are disappointing, because I'm really looking for the Lord of eternity, the God of all fulfillment. So when I finally got around to telling my parents, it wasn't the horror scene that some people imagine, where some really Orthodox Jewish parents sometimes have a funeral for their child and, you know, excommunicate and all that kind of stuff. But my parents certainly were not very happy about it, and
mm-hmm.
they struggled. They wanted to be true liberals in the sense of, well, whatever makes you happy, all religions are the same. And yet, underneath, I could tell, and I know for certain, that they were terribly disappointed. And when Jewish people become believers in Jesus, they feel like they've betrayed their people, that they're a traitor. So that was very, very painful and very difficult. I want to quickly jump way ahead and tell you that many, many years later, my mom came to faith, and then a few years after that, my dad came to faith.
Oh, I love it.
But the initial phone conversation and discussion was not a happy one.
Yeah. Randy, I want to talk about a blog you recently wrote where you were asking...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. You were asking readers to send questions they get asked by non-Christians. Fascinating. First response was, I haven't ever been asked a question. What's going on here?
I wish you would have prepared me for
that's this. Okay. It's the evangelism is breaking a taboo, and you went on to talk about that there is the crux of the problem in evangelism and apologetics is that people are we think that Christians are always getting asked the same questions about faith. And turns out they're not getting asked a lot of questions about faith.
Right, right. Yeah, and in fact, the response to my plea in that blog was the silence was deafening. I did hear from a few people, but not many.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think your experience is very common. People aren't asking those questions, and so we should be prepared to answer questions that people are likely to ask. But today, I think people are just not asking. And so I think we need to be the ones to start the conversations, and starting them by asking questions are good.
Yeah. Let me quote you, Randy, because this is brilliant. If we always wait for outsiders to bring up the topic of religion, we may wait a very long time before we evangelize. But if we just bring up the topic, we may face negative responses. I can think of at least two strategies to consider. So you've got my interest.
Well, so the bad news is, or I think the thing that may make us, you know, gun shy is people aren't asking us. We might assume that they're just not interested.
Right.
And so, but the good news is, I think a lot of people are interested, and I think that God, I think we need to trust in God's word that says God has placed eternity in people's hearts. And I think we need to, I think we can start the conversation gently, slowly, and not be surprised if, in fact, there's a whole drama going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in our world today, there's a lot of pressure to say, oh, don't show any interest, don't, you know, that really isn't all that important. It's very easy to live your life without any kind of idea about God. And I think even in the current moment right now that people are very reluctant to consider being a Christian because I think Christians have such a negative image in society. But it's amazing how many people are really asking difficult questions and wondering and feeling pain and feeling alienated. So I do a lot of interviewing of fairly recent Christians, and it's amazing to me how many of them have serious questions going on in the backdrop, and they probably would never initiate things, but if someone says to them, hey, you know, you want to come to this event, oh, actually, I think I might.
Yeah.
So all that to say is I still think it's worth taking the initiative to start the conversation. I do want to say we don't always have to have the whole entire conversation all at once. Sometimes it's just a good starter of, oh, hey, do you ever think much about spiritual things?
Mm-hmm. Randy Newman is my guest. We'll take a little break. When we come back, he's written three books, Questioning Evangelism, Corner Conversations, and Bringing the Gospel Home. I just love talking to him. We'll be back in about 90 seconds. It is 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Randy Newman is my guest. And Randy, I know you're a fan of Tim Keller, as am I. I heard a message that he preached recently, and he was talking about Peter Drucker, the author and business person who moved from Austria to Hoboken, New Jersey, like 70 years ago, and tried to buy a house. And the mortgage banker said, well, where do you go to church or synagogue? And he said, well, what does that have to do with anything? And he goes, well, how do we know who you are? How can we trust you? And now you fast forward 70 years, and being a Christian, you're almost seen as, you know, you're this person with these outdated beliefs that are being damaging to society.
Well, I know a lot of Christians are horrified by that and shocked by that, and I think what we need to do is adjust to the fact that America has really shifted rather dramatically, so that it is very strongly, almost militantly so secular, and therefore anti-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, we must go back and revisit those many places where Jesus told us people were going to hate us. I think we got lulled into this idea that people are always going to like us, because there was a period of time in America when, I'm not saying America was a Christian nation, but it was so strongly influenced by Christian beliefs that that was a unique moment in history for, I don't know, 50 or 100 or maybe even more years. But those days are gone. And we're now much more like the vast majority of the world and in history, when Christians have been hated. And that's very difficult for us to adjust to. I mean, it would be difficult under any circumstances, because nobody likes to be hated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's particularly difficult in America, because not that long ago we weren't hated. But you just think about all of those warnings Jesus gave us. You know, I mean, we are identified with a Messiah who was rejected and crucified.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us, blessed are you when people persecute you and insult you and say all kinds of evil things against you falsely because of me. They're going to lie about us. And yet we're continually surprised by that. So I think we just need to adapt and adjust and expect it, and then realize that the gospel goes forth even in that kind of hostile environment. It always has.
Yeah.
And people get saved even in the midst of that. So the current hostile climate is not a surprise to God, and it's not an obstacle for him.
Mm-hmm. Randy, you say in your blog, and I love this, because you say, as we get to know someone and ask them where they're from, what kind of work they do, how they like to spend their free time, what TV shows they watch, which podcast they listen to, we can throw in something like, well, how about spiritual things? Do you ever think much about faith? Why do we make sharing our faith so weird?
Because in our world today, it is weird. it is. Our world, I mean, you could live your whole life and not really have much interaction with spiritual issues or God in America today. I mean, that's strange, but so that's kind of the norm. I mean, if you watch television or you read the newspaper or whatever, you could read and watch for a very long time, and there's not a whole lot mentioned about spiritual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel weird because, in one sense, we are weird. The other is, I think there's a good likelihood that some people are not going to like this topic. I mean, so we don't want to bring up unpopular, uncomfortable topics.
Right.
No, I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but I don't think we should expect it to be, on the same level of talking about the weather or sports or politics. Or isn't it crazy? I mean, even politics, as strained and angry and controversial as it is actually less difficult to talk about than spiritual things.
That's true.
So I find myself having a little pep talk before. And it goes something like, okay, this may not go well. This is certainly going to be uncomfortable. But I value comfort too much. Lord, set me free from my idolatry of ease and comfort. I just want everything to be easy. And I've made an idol out of that. And so I need to repent of that and watch the Lord set me free about it. I mean, regularly I pray, Lord, would you work in my heart so that I'm more concerned about your glory than I am about my comfort?
I love that. All right, Randy, here's something.
Well, I don't love it at all. I think that's very painful.
Well, I know. I understand the pain, but you're encouraging, I know, the listeners, and reminding me of that very same thing, that you can just take it right to the Lord and say, I'm already uncomfortable, but I don't want to idolize comfort. And so this is always a good thing to hear. So I appreciate that.
And I will say that I have seen the Lord do some great work in my life in that area. And I find that to be a whole lot more, I don't know what the right word, more fruitful, more effective than beating myself up with, oh, why am I so reluctant to witness? Why is this so hard for me? That doesn't do anything other than heap guilt on me.
Right.
It's just not very helpful. I think repenting and asking God to help me, to set me free from idolatry. I mean, that's the gospel at work in me before I'm proclaiming the gospel to outsiders.
Mm-hmm. I remember a former pastor of mine said it's just a good way to remind yourself of two things. When was the last person you shared your hope with in Christ? When was it? And if you can't name it, you can't think of it, you might be slacking a little. And then what's the last piece of scripture that you read that the Holy Spirit just sort of illuminated something to you in a fresh way? If you can't name either of those two things, you know, maybe it's time to just get out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
All right. I want to run this by you. I thought this headline, nearly half of millennial Christians believe evangelism is wrong. It said that 47% of millennial Christians believe it's inappropriate to share their Christian faith with people of a different religion in hopes that they will eventually convert to Christianity. What's your thoughts on that?
I've got to start asking you to pre-screen these questions.
No, I mean, I
did see that report. On the one hand, I'm not totally surprised. I mean, I do think that younger people are questioning a whole lot more things and accepting standard things a whole lot less than they used to be. So I'm not totally surprised. On the other hand, I was concerned as I read further into that study. I'm not so sure they were as careful with defining terms as much as I think they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was pressed a little further, I read further down in the study about what it meant to be a practicing Christian. Their definition of a practicing Christian I thought was pretty vague or pretty loose. It was someone who said that religion or faith was important to them and someone who had attended a religious service within the last month. Well, that doesn't really help us know what do evangelical Christian millennials think about evangelism.
Good point.
I mean, that definition of it could apply to the most liberal of Protestants, the most liberal or nominal of Catholics. And I wouldn't expect those group of millennials to have a very high view of evangelism. So I took the whole thing with several grains of salt and thought, I wish we could have had a more precise limiting definition. I mean, if we really sat down and interviewed millennial Christians who attend evangelical Bible-believing churches that really believe people are lost without the gospel, what would those percentages be?
So, I would think they'd be high.
I think so, and so I felt a little frustrated. It was like this headline that it was shocking, and it got a lot of attention, and it gets sent around the internet. I don't know if it's really as helpful as we need it to be.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for bringing sense to the topic. I always appreciate your angle, and I just think you're just a great guest, and I love having you on the show.
Well. If I could throw in a commercial, I interviewed a whole bunch of new believers. I put a lot of their stories together in a book that's going to be coming out, hopefully, Lord willing, this summer, July, August. We're going to call it Unlikely Converts, Improbable Stories of Faith and What They Teach Us About Evangelism. And maybe I could come back and tell some of those stories.
Well, when you come back, we'll do a whole hour. How's that?
I like that idea.
Thanks. Thanks, Randy.
Great.
Yep, Randy Newman's been
sure,
my guest.
You're welcome.
Go to randynewman.com. We'll take a short break and be back with hour two in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.